The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good times.
But so many poor choices.
This is the Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah.
And I'm Nicole.
Hey, look what I did. 2024. I'm feeling strong.
First one out. Nice and smooth.
Yeah, you like that? You like them apples?
Yeah. For a second, I was like, uh-oh, do I need to fill the gap? Like,
you're ready to triage, not to do your part. Got it.
Like, after I said my name, I was like, that was it. Right, should I keep going?
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. Yep. I'm here. Mercury is no longer retrograding. Apparently, I'm capable of doing my intros now.
It's a whole new year, whole new us, but more than likely not.
No, I mean, it's just a new year. I'm the fucking same. I'm 100% the same.
Yeah. I don't really do New Year's resolutions.
No. I don't feel seated in any resolution at the moment. What I feel seated in is the seat I'm in, and I wish I could sit in it for, like, you know, the next 13 days without interruption so I could just be relaxed. But
I don't really do resolutions because, quite frankly, you could create a new goal or new whatever at any point in time. Like, the fact that it's the new year doesn't necessarily to me signify like this whole new, like, I mean, I come up with a new goal in June, so am I having a mid-year resolution? You know what I mean?
I don't know. Well, I mean, also consider the fact that time is just a social construct, and that goes into fucking years, not just minutes on the clock. Everybody's got different ways of celebrating a new cycle, I guess you could say. But, you know, different religions, different companies, cultures, whatever the fuck we're calling them anymore. Everybody's different. I don't feel like it's a new year until March. Like, spring is my new year feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
The nature is just popping off.
I don't know. Maybe for me, it's like taxes.
Not real. All bullshit, made up money.
Like, ah, oh, shit. Now here comes the fun. What do I owe?
Right.
And then here's a chance to start over and do it better.
That's amazing. Actually, I'm just going to recommend everybody goes through a credit union. Because speaking of taxes, A, I'm expecting to get money back this year finally, but B, unexpected money chunk came from being a member at a credit union. I got $1,500 back for being a member this year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's weird. I mean,
no.
It's great, but like,
it's a credit union thing. Like, as when you're a member, you're a literal member and you have stake in the company essentially. So, when the company does good, you get dividends. You get paid back.
I've had accounts at credit unions before, but I don't recall that happening before. But
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's just the credit union I'm in. I don't know, child. But I got $1,500 back, and I'm like, I'm going to pretend this doesn't exist. I didn't get this money. I'm just going to not look at it. Pretend it doesn't exist. And let it accrue more money.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you're telling me. I cried. Literal tears.
Really?
Yes. 100%. Who's not strapped for cash right now? Who's not hurting? Come on. We're all fucked.
Yeah. I don't know if I would have a crying reaction, but maybe a little mini dance party.
I mean, yeah, that was my crying reaction, I think, was just my emotions dancing.
Little two-step and your tear ducts.
Tear duct two-stepping just because my body's not moving. You know what I mean? Jeff Hill, it's got to escape somehow. Tear duct two-step.
Meanwhile, I'm over here. Did you see I'm drinking orange
I
Fanta?
did. I did see you were drinking a soda pop. What are you doing? Who are you?
I don't normally, but
No. And usually it's a Diet Coke.
no, I don't do that. If I drink a soda pop, then I go for the full-fledged thing. Like I don't like
Oh, well, I mean,
the taste of diet or aspartame or any of that stuff. So like
fair.
if I do it, I go for usually like a Coke or a Dr. Pepper or something. But anyway, I left the house today to run some errands and I was like, I'm gonna treat myself to like a fancy tea or something while I'm out. Well, I didn't realize that everybody is still off work this week because it was packed everywhere.
Oh, really? Yeah, I guess you're right. Like,
And
kids are still out in school, right?
In
Yeah.
Michigan, the kids aren't going back till January 8th. So,
What? Why? That's fucking weird. Anyway.
because the way that the Christmas holiday fell. So, anyway, I was like looking at the lines everywhere, like, okay, well, not gonna go through the Starbucks drive-thru. We are not doing this. We are not doing
No,
that. Like, we are staying on task.
we don't support Starbucks
So,
anyway. Fuck that place.
anyway, I was like, we're staying on task. I'm not gonna drive around trying to find a parking spot downtown either, blah, blah, blah. So I treated myself to an orange Fanta from Home Depot.
From Home Depot.
It was my final stop, and I was so thirsty,
I
but
get it.
I was holding out for my special bevy for treating
Yes.
myself for doing all my errands. And so I just was like, okay, you know what? And then look, I just started drinking it. Like,
I was gonna say, is that what you went and grabbed before the recording? Like, oh, hang on a second, I gotta get my special bevy. All right, y'all, this is what 40 looks like. You're excited about your Fanta that you've been saving.
Saving it.
As
I
a
just got home
snack.
not that long ago.
Yeah.
But still, like instead of keeping it out of the bag, I put it in the bag. I put the bag in the back. You know what I mean? I was like, damn it.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, you enjoy that, Fanta, while I tell you the story of Rebecca Lee Crumpler.
Oh, that's not a name I know.
No, it's not. She was a bad bitch, too. But anyway, do you have any more housekeeping? Like new year, new me shit, or we're Gucci?
No more housekeeping, I don't think. I
That's
mean,
fine.
since I don't do resolutions and a New Year's Eve to me is a stay home holiday.
Yep.
Like it's one of those days where I'm fine being in my pajamas the whole time and not leaving the
Yeah.
house.
Yeah.
I've just committed to the fact that if you leave on New Year's Eve, it's never going to be what you think it's going to be.
Oh no,
You're
and you're
just going
not
to
going to be
end up
sober when you put it in the
disappointed.
bag.
You're
Disappointed
just
and
going to
not
end up
sober.
disappointed. It's expensive. It never turns out right. I don't know. So, considering I'm just treating everything like it's another day, I have no New Year. No New Year
Well,
tidings.
well, season's greetings. Anyway, well then let's jump right in, right the fuck in. Let's do
Yeah.
this dance. Let's baste this turkey. That's been basted. Oh gosh, what's a spring saying? Anyway, let's pick these dandelions.
What? What is happening in your brain?
I don't know. Let's base this turkey. You just took me on a wild ride. In my head, I'm like, okay, that's Thanksgiving time frame, but Thanksgiving's over. So is there another way to say something like that for spring? No. Pick this dandelion. You know, just doesn't really roll off the tongue.
I did
Anyway.
have to bat away a mosquito the other day
Ew.
in Well, it would have been what, December 31st or January 1st or something. Like in Michigan, the weather is so crazy.
Wonky.
It's so warm that I was fighting a mosquito.
Yeah, which is strange.
From getting into my house. I thought they all die or go somewhere.
Yep.
And so
they typically die. I thought they just left. I didn't realize they stayed.
So I'm like, what the fuck? Where did you come from? That's what made me, when you just said like spring, I'm like thinking like, well, it still feels like it technically.
That is true. Yeah, my sister came back from, she lives in Washington on the actual water and on the coast. And she was like, your weather is just the same as mine. It's like monsoon season for Christmas. It's not, it's nothing. They don't get
there were
snow.
Days that it was the same temperature here in Michigan as it was with my family in Florida.
Yeah.
Maybe not during the day, like peak time, but like in the evening.
El Nino. It's happening.
Global warming.
Oh, God. That was funny. The Nino. All right, let's get into it. So, Miss Rebecca Lee Crumpler was just a bad bitch. She was actually born Rebecca Davis on February 8th, 1831. She was the first Black female to become a doctor of medicine in the U.S. And she was also one of the first female physician authors in the 19th century. So she went to school, got her schooling, made it through. They graduated her and all that fun stuff. And she was the first woman, African-American woman, to do that. Which is pretty
wow.
Dope.
I'm excited.
I know. In the 1800s, too. Like, I was kind of shocked by that, for sure. Especially since, like, I'll get into it, but, like, slavery was still actively going on while she was pursuing her medical career. Wild. So she was born in Christiana, Delaware, to her mother, Matilda Weber, and her father, Absalom Davis. Sadly, there is not a lot of information on what happened when she was born in that time frame. I'm going to make the assessment based on Sarah's world that there was likely not a lot of records taken because there weren't a lot of literate people around her. Just straight up.
I thought you were going to say sadly, like she lost both parents or something.
No,
not sadly that there
we don't
was
know.
No,
no idea what happened to her parents.
I was like, what a lead in.
Yeah, right. No, I'm just assuming this is probably sad.
No, that's probably true. That's probably true. Like, I mean, they didn't really care about Black people or their lives or
exactly.
anything.
So,
and the people who could write and read were not necessarily other Black people. And so, yeah.
Nor did they care. So, yeah. So, really what happens from when she was born up to when she was sent to her aunt's farm in Pennsylvania, or not farm, but like to her aunt to live with her in Pennsylvania, who was her actual caretaker. So I don't know how old she was. I have no idea. Don't know. So she lived with Auntie, and Auntie was like the caretaker for the townspeople. It's like anywhere in the community, anybody in the community that needed like medical help, they would go to Auntie. And like, I don't know if she was, I mean, she had to have been more holistic. It's the 1800s, and she wasn't a classically trained, because there was no such thing as classically trained doctor at the time. My assumption is that she was kind of doing holistic medication remedies, etc., etc., you know, kind of like maybe a midwife or something like that, but she was a caretaker. And so that really spurred Rebecca to want to be a doctor. Like that's what she decided she wanted to pursue was being a nurse. And so,
well, I mean, if they weren't calling her a witch, then
they were in the North now.
Okay.
And this is the Civil War era. So they were in the North.
Yeah.
Don't forget that. So, yeah, in the South, she more than likely would have been called a witch and all that fun stuff. But the North was a little more progressive, and so they were taking it seriously, and I'm hoping, anyway. But I have to also assume she was in a community of Black people. She wasn't servicing white people.
Right.
She was in a group of men and women and children who were formerly enslaved, and that was, or were enslaved, and she was taking care of them. So,
yeah.
Since deciding to become a nurse in 1852 is when she moved to Charleston, Massachusetts to work as a nurse before applying and being accepted into the New England female medical college. Got to make sure it's the female medical college because they didn't mix co-eds.
I'm surprised that that even existed.
Me too. Super duper shocked. But there is, I mean, it's like it was one person who decided that women are just as important as men and facilitated that of the college to be whatever.
They might have done it because they needed more nurses to take care of the wounded from the war.
You are correct. So that is exactly what it was. Yep. So there was a person that firmly believed that more women should have access to this kind of information so that they can contribute to society, et cetera, et cetera. And so the medical college was, I don't know when it was founded or opened or whatever, but she applied. She ended up being accepted into the college. Then from 55 to 64, she was a nurse. So there's a little bit of like, I don't really know. There's several colleges and schools that she had attended. The first one being the New England Female Medical College. But then in 1860, while she was working as a nurse, she, her supervisor decided that, or encouraged her to apply to this next school that she went to. But I'm going to jump into something different quick. So she met a man called Wyatt Lee in Charleston while she was living there. And he was a Virginian native, a former slave. They were married in April 19th, 1859. This was actually his second marriage, and this was her first. A year later, his son Albert died at 7 years old, and they say this also may have prompted her to pursue her medical career. And so while she was a student in college, she ended up losing her husband. He passed away from tuberculosis on the 18th of April in 1863. Then she met and married Arthur Crumpler in St. John, New Brunswick on May 24th, 1865. So I don't know how they met. My assumption is that they met in the college that she was going to because he was tied to it in a way. So the story's wild. He too was formerly a slave, but he escaped from Southampton County, Virginia. He was born in 1824 to Sam Crumpler, an enslaved man, a man that was enslaved by Benjamin Crumpler. So he was living on a neighboring estate from the Crumpler estate. He was living with his mom and his siblings. So the owner of the estate passed away and his family was sold when he was only 9 years old. Okay. The owner's son decided to keep him after he won a wrestling contest with him on the day of the auction. So slaves used to be pitted against each other.
Yeah.
And they would fight. So this man had a 9-year old fight and decided to keep him after he, you know, won. Fucked.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, and you said that they were given the last name of their owner.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. No identity. Mm-mm. No lineage.
None.
No, and nothing.
And to your point, his family was sold with the exception of him. He has no clue where they went. He never saw them again. And the only person he ended up like still under, like at least knowing where she went, was his sister. The rest of his siblings and mother, has no idea where they went. They never saw each other again. Or his dad.
God.
It's just so fucking heartbreaking.
I don't
understand it. I really don't. How do you have no empathy for a living thing? It just fucking blows me away. So he ended up getting older. He served for the Union Army at Fort Monroe as a blacksmith. That was what he was good at when he was enslaved. He ended up in Massachusetts in 1862 and was taken in by Nathaniel Allen, who was actually the founder of the West Newton English and Classical School, also called the Allen School. So she attended several schools. I'm sorry, she didn't attend them. She attended the New England Medical School for females, but then she also did teach later. So jumping back to Rebecca. She was a unique instance in the industry as a Black woman, and due in part to the Civil War, the demand for medical care was super duper high for all the veterans that were in need and all those that were wounded coming back, etc. And she was actually given a recommendation, like I said, by her supervisor while she was nursing to attend the New England Female College. And he was like, I have to assume a white man, but he said that she should absolutely apply. She won a tuition award from the Wade Scholarship Fund that was actually established by a local businessman named John Wade of Woburn. They primarily taught women to be midwives, but that school expanded their class courses when she started. And so they expanded it to like more of the traditional medicine that we know today, not just midwifery. She was also accepted into the elite West Newton English and Classical School in Massachusetts, where she was a special student in math. So I don't know when. I don't know if she was in attendance at both times. I have no idea. But there's this really interesting data breakdown that I think that you'll enjoy. So there were 54,543 physicians in the U.S. at that time. Only 300 of them were women, and she was the only Black woman.
It's wild.
Got a little choked up about that. It's emotional.
Yeah.
So she was the first African-American woman to become a formally trained physician in the U.S., like a formal medical doctor, M.D., Rebecca M.D. In 1864, she graduated from the college for female medical stuff and completed about 3 years of work, a thesis, and a final oral exam in February. So everything came to a head. And then on March 1st, the Board of Trustees named her a doctor of medicine. Unfortunately, at the time, she was married to Wyatt Lee and identified as Ms. Rebecca Lee. So the documentation has Ms. Rebecca Lee, not Crumpler. After practice or after graduation, she practiced medicine in Boston, and she primarily cared for, again, the Black community, more women and children over anybody else. After the war ended in 65, she moved to Richmond, Virginia, as she believed it was an ideal way to provide missionary service and get more experiences to learn about diseases and their impact to women and children. So she was very, very honed in on women and children. Like, men, yes, I'll treat you, but I really want to understand how we can make her, my experience, better. So that was her focus.
Well, she... I mean, I think innately, a lot of times women do want to cater to women because we know.
Don't get catered to otherwise.
I'm like, we know what it feels like, because still to this day, there's this rhetoric that, like, you go to a doctor as a woman and they can dismiss you or make you think that it's in your head or not properly understand the level of pain or whatever is going on, because women have for so long just functioned and operated with a tolerance level that is insanely more capable than men, I think, in a lot of regards. And so there's also a distinguishing factor between women accurately describing the problems, but also being understood while telling them. And so I think that a lot of female doctors kind of lean more like empathetic towards women.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And it's an unfortunate situation that's been built into, I don't know, the society, I guess, of like, or the culture of medicine. at least when it comes to men, like I try to have female doctors as much as possible.
Absolutely. 100%.
I've been dismissed by so many male doctors.
Yep.
Or
like talked down to, like I'm not smart enough to understand. So they simplified it really, really heavily. It's like, hey, wait, whoa, I know those words. You can use them.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I've had poor experiences with male doctors. And so we're talking now, what, 2 centuries after this woman had decided to go into medicine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm putting myself in her shoes and I just feel it. Like, if no one's going to care about women in general, but especially Black women, at least she can.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she took every opportunity she could. And Not to say she didn't fight for every opportunity. She absolutely had to. Racism was rampant. Again, there were slaves still in this time frame. The Civil War was about slavery. So you can imagine that people who see this woman as less than are not expecting her to come in and be their physician. So she achieved all of this, but mm-hmm. she still was met with so much pushback along the way.
Yeah.
So while she was in Virginia and she was helping out with the veterans, the women and children as well, she claimed that during that time there, nearly every hour she improved herself in the area she was experiencing. So the quote is, the last quarter of the year in 66, I was enabled to have access to each day to a very large number of indigent and others of different classes in a population of over 30,000 colored. So basically she was saying that she was exposed to a large spectrum of things that were ailing the colored population at the time, Black people that she was helping. And she learned a lot and she like soaked it up like a sponge.
Good.
Yeah.
There are some certain metrics where Black women are more affected than other races. And I still don't know if we know why, but like, it's a thing for real.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Everybody is different. Especially since a lot of the lineage is just not, you can't trace it. You have no idea what the genetics are, what the history is, where these people originated, how they developed what they have. You know, it's evolution. So
yep.
she took advantage of her opportunities for sure. So she went and worked for the Freedmen's Bureau to provide medical care to the freedmen and freedwomen who were denied care by white physicians, which means she was again serving the Black community of formerly enslaved folks who needed medical attention and were just pushed off by white people. Not everybody was rooting for her, like I said. So while mm-hmm. she was at the Bureau, she worked under Orlando Brown, who was the assistant commissioner. She was definitely subject to racism from both the admins and other physicians that she worked directly with. She would sometimes even have problems getting her prescriptions filled, and would be ignored by the male physicians. Like, as they were in the room talking, she would speak and they wouldn't say a fucking thing or look at her back. Like, just, you don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
The disrespect. They also said that people would heckle her, saying the MD she earned in medical school stood for mule driver.
Oh my God.
They just were unrelenting. Yes. From there, she ended up moving to 67 Joy Street in Boston. And what I'm finding is a lot of the information that we have available to us in these like articles that I'm finding, they're doing a lot of census, like the Census mm-hmm. Bureau. They're doing mm-hmm. a lot of figuring that with that information. So that's why I'm giving you the address and the street name. 'Cause it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, she went to the 67 Joy Street in Boston. It was a predominantly Black community in Beacon Hill, and she practiced medicine treating children without much concern for their parents' ability to pay. She had absolutely no interest in collecting their money. None. The home she lived in is actually still on the Boston's Women Heritage Trail as well. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty beautiful.
I mean, talk about a real hero.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the most underserved community possible. She went and did that.
Without any type of financial promise. Right.
Yeah, no. She won tuition. She won a scholarship. from a white man. Like, come on. So, in the 1870s, she and her husband supposedly had a daughter called Lizzie Sinclair. There's no real record of her after the fact, so it's assumed that she did not survive infancy, which is sad. Like, even they didn't document a lot of the stuff at their own lives. And also, like, she didn't, they didn't have access to take pictures of themselves. So there's no photo evidence of anything. Remember, this is the late 1800s, not even 1900s yet. She ended up speaking, though, in 1874 at a funeral service for the Massachusetts Senator Charles Sumner. She read a poem that she had written where she touchingly alluded to his love for the gifted Emerson. She, so like, I don't know what her relationship was with the senator, but I have to assume that she was collecting accolades for what she was doing, and he was probably presenting them to her. Like, hey, I recognize you as a Black woman in the community doing this for your people. I want to present you with this award, whatever. And then Emerson was actually another person, I guess you could say, who was very interested in equality and understanding more about society and why we do the things we do. And he very much pushed for women, equal rights, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why she basically was like, thank you for, you know, your touchingly, or she wrote him a poem about how he was in, how he loved Emerson. But also in Sarah's world, I wonder, like, did Emerson and Charles have a little thing? It could have. I don't know.
This is is Emerson the first name?
Yeah.
Of the person, so it's most likely a guy.
Mm-hmm. It is a man.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's also this whole wartime closeness that can happen if you've lost a lot of people, and if they were working together on any of the post-battle grounds, or, you know, just people bond together through the shit they see and experience. Yeah. And who knows? I mean, yeah, I guess there could have been a potentially a relationship there. I don't know. I mean,
who knows? Either
mean, way. Homosexual or not, but like, I feel like if you're out there bandaging people together, literal like limbs,
fingers are falling off,
and,
yes,
you know, it's just it's a different bonding experience.
Yeah. So before and during the Civil War, the Senator Charles Sumner was a leading American advocate for the abolition can I say
abolition
that? Yeah, thank you, of slavery. So
yeah, I mean, they seen some shit, you know, they've been through some things.
Yeah, together.
They were fighting things together.
Yes, together. So, and then Ralph Waldo Emerson. He was an American essayist, lecturer, philosopher.
Oh, my God. That's why I asked. I'm like, is Emerson the first name? You're like, yeah. And I'm like, because this whole time I was thinking that you meant Ralph Waldo Emerson, who's an extremely prolific writer.
Yes.
His first name is not Emerson.
No, it's not. I lied to you. It's Ralph. I didn't have it on my notes.
And yes. This whole time I'm thinking, like, she's writing this poem because Ralph Waldo Emerson is a celebrity of this time.
That makes
sense. This is not, and so that's why I was like, wait, I don't want to assume that that's what she's talking about. So then I'm like, well, okay. Now, see, it all makes more sense.
Yep. Here we are. Together.
I should have just come right out and been like, is it Ralph Waldo Emerson?
I can look.
It's so funny to me that you didn't have that, though, like, off the top of your head. You're like, it wasn't in front of my face. I'm like, he's extremely prolific. Like, what?
Sadly, I know the name. I'm not connecting the dots right now, honestly. Thanks, ADHD. Thank you. I'll remember everything, like, this morning at 2 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And so you're speculating a homosexual relationship. However, students to this day probably still learn about his writing.
Yep, that's fine. It's cool.
So I don't.
Well, see, this is why people need to take everything we say with just a grain, you know?
Or wait for me to correct you, I
a
guess.
Fair reminder. Yeah, there's that.
I don't know. I mean, I say the wrong things all the time too, but that one really got me.
That's why we're here.
Major philosopher. Like, we still like question philosophies that he put
in. Cool.
Okay.
It still triggers people to this day, but it's fine. Oh, that's really funny. So she actually did end up teaching in Wilmington and then Newcastle, Delaware in 1876. So I wish there was more about her, because it seems like her life was so full of these really great experiences and opportunities that she very much took, but there's not a lot of like information on it, you know?
Yeah.
To that point, there are no photographs, like I said, then, but there was a Boston Globe article, and I'm going to paraphrase here, described her as a very pleasant intellectual woman with an indefatigable infatigable church worker. That's what it is. Is that a word? It is, I guess. Anyway.
Let's ask Ralph.
Emerson, you mean. Hello. So, Dr. Crumbler is 59 or 60 years of age, tall and straight with light brown skin and gray hair. About marriage, she said the secret to a successful marriage is to continue in the careful routine of the courting days till it becomes well understood between the two. Like, I want to go read her book. So also she had a book, but they, her and her husband moved to Hyde Park in Boston in 1880. They were very active members of the 12th Baptist Church, where he was actually a trustee. And then in 1883, she had her two-part book called A Book of Medical Discourses published. She took her notes from over her course, the course of her career, and actually just created a full-on publication from them. And she dedicated it to nurses and others for the possibilities of prevention. So, like I kind of stated earlier, she was very focused on women and children, but she was also focused on making sure women could protect themselves. The book focused on, well, wait, hang on a second. I lost my thought. She really wanted to give women education on prevention to better protect themselves, especially if they were to become nurses. So at one point she stated that most nurses did not agree with the prevention and forgot that for every ailment, there was a cause within their power to remove it. So she was kind of like level setting everybody, not to be all in the hype of like, oh, this medication will do this, and oh, this medication will do this, and really wanted people to understand like this, a lot of this stuff is preventable if you were just to fucking take care of yourself better or whatever, you know? So,
well, and she's got roots with her aunt's kind of holistic midwifery solutions, right?
Exactly.
So she's keeping things grounded here with there's no magic pills, people.
Yep. And she definitely sneakily incorporated homeopathy into her work without formally stating it. And she also never explicitly states that medicine can be harmful, but she does state it as there is a conventional amount to take. So she was very cautious upfront with medication off the rip. It was very much trying to be, and she was trying to enable women to be proactive, basically, which who doesn't love that?
Right.
So the first part was about mitigating or preventing and mitigating like intestinal problems that can occur with children from 0 to 5, especially around the, you know, teething age or whatever. So I don't know a thing about what children went through when they were teething in the 1800s. I assume it was fucking weird, uncomfortable, and whatever parents tried to give children to eat to soothe maybe fucked their stomachs up. That's where I'm going with that.
Or the kids were just putting stuff in their mouths, right? I mean, those kids still do that today, but yeah. The disease level was more rampant and people aren't like washing their hands for 20 seconds and whatever, right? So who knows what the kid's putting in his mouth, maybe even just his own fingers to try to soothe the pain and the teeth cutting through the gums, and his fingers are gross.
Right, exactly. So that's the first part. The second part was actually mainly about life and growth of beings, like the beginning of womanhood and the prevention and cure of the most distressing complaints for both sexes. Like, it was almost more philosophical than it was medical in the second part. She included some politics and some moral commentary as well, advising it like, hey, what age a woman should enter marriage, and also advice on how do you have a happy marriage. So it was kind of like this all-encompassing kind of like live your life pamphlet. Well, book. It's a book.
But she was religious.
Yes.
So if she's talking about the beginning of a life, I wonder how
that played into it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because she was a woman of science. But
right.
And I think that, and this is again Sarah's world, so don't come at me, but I think that in communities that really gather in their churches around this organized, I'm using air quotes, organized religion, they for certain have a dedication to their Lord. I personally think a lot of the times these communities need each other, and so they're gathering around organized religion, but really they're creating a community of like-minded people that they can feel safe with.
And yeah.
So I think that was maybe her lens at the time, because the end of Civil War era, you know.
Yeah. I mean, because if she's talking about it from a science perspective and not sitting here saying that Eve is from Adam's rib, like,
yes,
I give her a lot of respect, because exactly. The church world would not be okay with
that. No, dear child, no. Okay. In the beginning of her book, it had a preface in her own words, which is incredibly uncommon slash never had been done before, because at the time they were typically crafted in the style of how a white man would write to prove authenticity. And as we know, speech patterns are different in communities, ethics, and cultures. Even in the United States, we have different dialect in different regions of a different, just like one state. So I imagine a lot of the writings at the time are what we see today, and they were just disrespecting the lack of education that people had prior to. So the authenticity was having good grammar and spelling. But she writes, it may well be, let me restart. Man, I need to reset today. Okay. It may be well to state here that having been reared by a kind of aunt in Pennsylvania whose usefulness with the sick was continually sought, I early conceived a liking for and sought every opportunity to relieve the sufferings of others. Later in life, I devoted my time, when best I could, to nursing as a business, serving under different doctors for a period of 8 years, most of the time at my adopted home in Charleston, Middlesex County, Massachusetts. For these doctors, I received letters commending me to the faculty of the New England Female Medical College, wherein 4 years afterwards, I received the degree of doctress in medicine.
Oh, wow. We had a story where I was talking about a woman who called herself an editress.
Yes. The first because, editor. Yep.
Yes. The first major
Thanksgiving lady.
Female editor. Name? Yeah.
I can't remember her name. I just remember her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So, Rebecca, unfortunately, she passed in 1895 on March 9th. So, I guess, how old was she? She was born in 31, and she passed in 95. That's not a very long life.
So. She passed in 1895?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's like just about 60.
Yeah, 64.
Yeah. Her husband actually kicked around a while after her and passed in May of 1910. They were both buried. This is what fucking kills me the most. They were both buried in unmarked graves for 125 fucking years in Fairville Cemetery. Till 2020. 2020. Unmarked graves for the very first Black woman in the United States to become a doctor. She was buried in an unmarked fucking grave. So on July 16, a ceremony was held to dedicate a gravestone in memory of the couple. The granite gravestone was a result of fundraising that was led by Vicky Gall. She was the president of the Friends of Hyde Park Library. So thanks to Vicky, Miss Mayhem has herself at least a headstone with her husband. And sadly, that concludes all the information I could find on Miss Rebecca Lee Crumpler. Shout out to Wikipedia, of course, NPS.gov, and womenhistory.org for helping me out.
The editress name was Sarah Josephia Hale.
That's right. It was her name. It was my name.
Yep. Episode 264. Well, thank you for sharing that. Jeez. It doesn't surprise me that her death was a little, I don't know, shushed, was, is, I don't,
right,
non-flamboyant or whatever. Like, I feel like a woman who make those big strides are really just like, I'm doing it for the next person, or I'm doing it for my community, or I'm doing it for other women, and like, don't put a lot of fuss into themselves.
Right.
Or, you know, trying to get the extra recognition or whatever. And it would have been really hard anyway at that time to get her the what she deserved. So I'm glad that they came back around and did something to celebrate it. I mean, Jesus, though, that's a long ass time.
Yeah, you're telling me. And the fucked up thing is, in 2019, on March 30th, the governor of Virginia declared, the governor declared that March 30th, 2019, frickin' numbers. Virginia's governor declared that day to be Dr. Rebecca Lee Crumpler Day. So that's kind of cool. And then let's see. Only 2% of practicing physicians identify as African-American women. Isn't that sad?
Yeah. Wow.
Right?
That's crazy.
It's such a low amount of people. Like, it just makes me so sad.
I didn't realize it was still, that the balance was still that far off. I didn't realize it. So, thanks for bringing the story up and continuing to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because, as someone who definitely dabbles in Eastern and Western medicine, I feel like I have a very similar thought process as Miss Rebecca in regards to medicine and prevention and all of that. And I'm consistently trying to seek out the best care that I can get. And a lot of times it's not covered on insurance, or it's not functionally looking at my entire body or how things get processed fully. It's like you have your one specialist with your one Band-Aid, and then a domino effect of other things happens because they don't look at it. They don't look at the whole body as one unit.
Morgan. Yep.
They're looking at this bit and that bit. And it's unfortunate that there's not more of her.
I agree. And like the womenshistory.org article actually had a little bit more like tea detail or whatever, but you know, it's sickening to me that there is somebody like her out there who did all these wonderful things, and there's literally just this kind of like just a contained story that can be told in less than 20 minutes about her life. Like, She did such amazing work and nobody documented it. Bums me out.
And I, yeah, I mean, a lot of these times when we do these stories, unless they've uncovered a diary or personal journal,
right?
But it sounds like what she was keeping track of was trends, tests, you know, things in the medical world, genealogy, even maybe, or something. She was not keeping track of like her own life. Like I said, these women oftentimes just are like, this is what I do, and you don't need to make a big deal out of it, you know?
No reason to fuss. This is just an everyday thing. And everybody's like, nope, fuss.
Yeah. And
they don't sometimes.
We learned from our like last season of shows where we had a lot of relationship coaches and dating experts and life coaches and whatever. So we came across quite a few doctors who came on the show or who had written books. And all of the women who came on, they were doctors or had their PhD. Maybe they weren't practicing medicine, but, you know, had a doctor label. We're like, oh, you don't have to worry about it. Like, you can just call me Karen, you know?
And every time you were like,
and every time we're like, no,
we earned all of that. We're going to use every fucking letter you earned. PhD, MD, FD, PQ. I don't give a shit.
And they're 25. Like, oh, no, it's not a big deal. Or, it was like, you know, just call me Dr. Karen or whatever. And the men would come on and you better have that title and the full name. It's wild. Right? It's wild.
We need to own it.
The disparaging difference in the egos of men and women, yeah. And the real core of I want to help people versus I want to help people but also be recognized.
Seriously, you can see when people are genuinely there for the people is how they expect to be addressed. That's my indicator.
It was weird. I was just like, okay, I've never really come across this trend before, because when are you going in front of that many people with doctorates on a regular basis? And if it's your regular doctor, you have a different relationship. So I don't know, a lot of them I don't call by their first name anyway, but
I just call them all my doctor's doc.
But yeah, it's unfortunate that there's not more information, but I'm glad that there is something.
Me too.
And that there was some recognition. And that, how did you come across her? I'm liking that you found out about her.
I found her. I was going to do, okay, so full disclosure, I was going to do Little Debbie. And little bonus.
The snack queen?
Yeah, she's actually a real human. Her grandparents used her likeness for the Little Debbie shit and didn't tell her parents. And she's actually still currently running Little Debbie. She's like the CEO.
Really?
Yeah.
I just assumed that she was like Betty Crocker, who's not real.
Nope. Little Debbie's a real actual person.
Did I just blow something up for you, though? Did you know Betty Crocker's not real?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
I was actually going to do an April Fool's episode on Betty Crocker, but it's okay. I actually was planning that, if you can believe it.
Wow. You really had springtime on the brain.
I do.
You're already thinking about April.
I'm closer to warm things. Yes.
Yeah, it hasn't been that terribly cold, though. So, anyway, thank you for sharing that story and doing the research and letting us know about Miss Rebecca, because, man, there are other young Black women who hear this story. I hope it revives them.
Me too. Or just anybody in general.
Inspired. Honestly. Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, I would say like, yes, if we have a community of listeners who are Black women, we appreciate you. And we want you to do nothing but the best in your life. So hopefully it gave you a little oomph, a little motivation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, you know, gonna say I know what it's like to walk in their shoes by any means. But I'm just assuming that if they're considering going into the medical field or being a doctor of some kind, that there's misplaced doubt that they don't need to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Just run it, sis.
Yeah.
Let it rip.
Yeah, we got to get these percentages more balanced.
For real.
That's unless, crazy.
I mean, and I'm trying to think back into like my extensive medical career as a professional sick person.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say I've never had or encountered anybody of color in my time in medicine, like going through all the things. It's always been white men and white women.
Oh, I've had a sprinkling of Indian and Arabic. I do recall having one black male doctor. And I ended up switching from him to a woman because his recommendations were bullshit and not working. So when I switched,
it would work for anybody else. It just didn't work for her.
So when I switched from him to a woman neurologist, then we got on the right path.
That's
might have had a woman. Nope, she was Arabic. Dermatologist. But no, you're right.
Okay. So I'm taking it back. I'm thinking about my dermatologist, and she's an Asian lady. And then I had a couple other non-Western medicine doctors who were not white people. But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional medicine is white folk. Gross.
Well, there's a pretty big Asian population in there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Thanks for coming to our talks.
I know. It's at a girl time now.
Yes,
so that's where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or good that's happened to us. And my at a girl, man, I don't remember what episode I did my at a girl on where I was saying like I attempted to sell my clothes. I think it was like from a month and a half ago. I was like, I attempted to sell my clothes. It backfired, but good for me for trying.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I scheduled an appointment at a different place to sell clothes. And in the meantime, I also gave some things away to like friends' daughters.
Aww,
which
that's cute.
Is better than throwing it in the bin.
Yep. In the bin.
Yeah. You know those bins that they have at the
quarters
where you can just dump it in the bin?
Yeah, those bins freak me out. I always feel like there's a person in there.
Really?
Yes.
I wasn't saying it like as in the British way of saying it, like you're gonna chuck it in the bin like it's trash.
Oh, I definitely you were going British with that one. I thought that was undertones from the UK. Okay.
No. I was meaning the donation bins, not the trash bin.
Yeah, the ones that are in the parking lots.
Yes. So anyway, today I had an appointment and they only bought three things out of my massive bag, which is still better than nothing.
Was it worth your trip?
I ended up just doing a store credit and got two new things. So
that's a wash.
It's a yes. However, the two new things, like maybe I'll actually wear, right? Versus the other three things that I would not. So,
right.
I don't know. And so anyway, my girl is just like, I didn't give up on this pursuit. I listed them on Facebook Marketplace. I listed clothes on Poshmark. And I've sold other household goods on Facebook Marketplace as well. Like, it's quite the effort, I must say.
It's a full-time job.
Quite the effort.
Job.
Well, you get a lot of people who message you on Marketplace and then don't follow through, and it's very annoying to me.
Yes, I imagine it is just as annoying as online dating for you.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So I got curious about the word doctress because what? So I looked it up really quick, and apparently the English language used to try to be more gendered. So doctress was a word used for female doctor. The English language has become incredibly gender neutral because there used to be phrases like lawyeress, professoress, anything with the R-E-S-S at the end of
actress,
it.
Comedian. Yes.
So there's that. We're slowly getting out of that, I guess. All right, my atta girl. Well, we haven't done anything since Christmas, right?
No, this is our first episode, so we had about a week and a half.
Yeah. So my atta girl, my shower was doing the black mold behind the silicone caulking thing. Couldn't clean it, couldn't soak it, get it out, whatever. And I don't like that at all. I'm not okay with black mold in my shower at any capacity. So I scraped and scraped and scraped and scraped and cleaned and cleaned and cleaned and then re-silicone caulked my tub. And I'm very proud of myself because I think it looks great. And I'm just really excited to see if it lasts.
Oh, well, why wouldn't it?
I don't
Did you
know.
Not let it dry long enough or something before you applied?
We let it go for 24 hours, but it's the first time I've done it. You know what I mean? I don't
yeah.
know what I'm fucking doing. So we'll see what happens. But my plans are, I'm hoping my next attic girl is that I did the same thing for my kitchen counter, which that might be a bigger project because I have to remove the faucet to get access to the stuff behind it. So we'll see how that goes. I may need
Removing faucets is
might need
tedious.
A project assistant.
Well, removing them is not bad. Putting them back is tedious.
Right. And like the
I phone a friend for that because
And the seals on the, I don't know, whoever installed this shit just did a very poor job. Like they didn't do it right. They did it quick and it's, you can tell. So like the seals on all the different sink things are all coming out anyway. So it'll be a good time for me to just give it a little refreshy fresh, but I need assistance. So we'll see if I can rope the boy. Hello. Would you help
Well,
me?
I'm super proud of you because I was determined to do the caulk in my bathroom when I moved in 6 years ago.
Well, like I said, it was black mold growing behind it, and it was the kind you couldn't get out. And it's the kind that there's no bleach you can dump, there's no peroxide. It's just, it's not accessible.
Yeah.
Organic matter. And it was clear that the job that was done was poor. So in doing that, I found that all of the grout was mixed improperly. And so now it's just flaking off when I clean it. Love that for me. So that might be my next adventure. Before the kitchen, I'm not sure. Homeowner shit, don't do it.
Oh goodness. Well, that's a really good atta girl.
Thanks,
that's
thank you.
That's a process. That's days because the steps. Part of the reason I never did mine is because I don't have another bathroom.
That was the only thing that helped me push through the steps. It's because I have another shower I can use. When I lived in my other house, I had a second shower in the basement. And when that tub was leaking, they redid it. And I just suffered because I didn't want to shower in the basement.
Yeah, but you belong to a gym that has showers, don't you?
I do now, but like back then I did not.
Oh, yeah, true.
It was just a 24-hour dry time.
Okay.
So it was no big deal. But yeah. So that's that. Happy New Year, bitches.
Happy New Year. Home Man's out.